Blog Talk Radio.
The HD View.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. It's time for Ask Dr. Goodman Show. This is Melissa Gagliardi, your host, and tonight our calling numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1, we'll cue you into the show. Please tell all your colleagues, friends, and family about Health for HD Radio and click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. Thank you, 85,000 listeners, for your support and interest in Health for HD programming. Tonight, we get to talk to you, Dr. Goodman, and we will be discussing two articles that she recently posted. The first one was posted on March 1st, Raptors Clinical Trial for Cystamine in Huntington's. Cause for optimism. This is exciting stuff. And then the last one she posted on March 27 is titled, What is Cystine? And what does it have to do with Huntington's disease? So we're going to find out what that is all about. Welcome back to your show, Dr. Goodman. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. Good to be here.
Good. Yeah. So exciting information from Raptor announced clinical results with their RP-103 in Huntington's disease. That was back in February. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what is that cystamine? What is that?
Well, remember that this was a press release. So this has not been reviewed by peers in a scientific journal. This is, so it's preliminary in a sense. You know, press releases tend to tell us about the positives. They don't have to tell us about what wasn't found or what might have been negative, but they can legitimately tell us about what they found positive. And they are required really by regulations to be fairly honest about their positive results. But remember, it isn't complete because it hasn't been peer-reviewed or published in a science journal, but still, the press release is exciting, I think, because it is really the first drug in clinical trial that looks like it might have the ability to slow Huntington's. They're not just
right.
Treat a symptom, but have the ability perhaps to slow Huntington's. And what was exciting, even more exciting, or adds to the excitement, is the recent publication of the cystine article by Solomon Schneider about why this drug should work, or why this drug may be working. So we have things coming together kind of within a month of each other that both support that this could be a good thing for Huntington's.
No. Why isn't this all over the place, publicized all over the place? You know, I didn't see the article that you're referring to. I didn't get a copy of that one, unfortunately.
Release.
Oh, okay, so
release?
It's the actual Raptor press release. Okay, I did get that. And this was a trial that was conducted at 8 clinical sites throughout France.
No, this was at 2, I think, 2 sites in France.
Okay.
So it's just one country and 2, mm-hmm. I believe it was 2, separate, centers where Huntington's people are taken care of. The interesting thing about France is they have had a countrywide registry, national registry for a lot of years. So they have,
mm-hmm.
More than 1,000 plus patients in that registry
wow.
that they have followed for, 6, 7 more years. That is what, Enroll hopes to accomplish on an even
mm-hmm.
larger scale. So they were able in just 2 centers to recruit almost 100 people. probably using their wow. registry system. So mm-hmm. so that's another positive point for this trial. They didn't have to. The other interesting thing I learned is that Raptor did not have to pay for the trial. They paid for, you know, supplying the drug and, you know, analysis and a whole bunch of things, but they didn't pay for the actual trial. The French, I believe it was the French community, the French government who did, you know, with
oh, wow.
input from the French Huntington's community. So this mm-hmm. wouldn't have happened without some very good Frenchmen there
mm-hmm.
and French investigators willing to do this.
Oui, oui.
So that's very, yeah, oui, oui, that is very important.
yes. Wow.
The other thing about this drug is that it's already, a formulation of it is already FDA approved. So it's been through a lot of safety, not just safety trials, but has been used in people for, in fact, children for the last 10 years. So there's a long safety record.
I did see some clinical trials on clinicaltrials.gov with this compound, but I didn't see anything for Huntington's disease, per se,
right.
from Raptor.
It's a French study, so it is not,
okay.
unfortunately, listed under clinicaltrials.gov. I believe it is mm-hmm. their plan to do that, because it would be nice. It would be good to know a little bit more about their protocol, which in at least what I could find in the French, could find on, you know, trying to find it on Google, the French clinical trial or the European clinical trial registry, is they don't give as much information, actually, as the U.S. clinicaltrials.gov does. So we don't have too much about what was, you know, what exactly was done and what all they measured.
Will we have to do a FDA clinical trial here in the U.S. with this?
I think that is to be decided. You know, I don't know the answer to that. I believe that they are in process or at least are considering going to FDA with what they have for a couple of reasons. One, you know, is it good enough if the next year and a half goes forward, is it good enough to say that we should get this this drug approved, or will the FDA say that no, you need to do another trial? I think that, you know, that's not known yet. But either case, going to the FDA and getting their advice is important, I think, at this stage to speed things along. And I do know that they are in process of planning such a thing, at least.
Oh, very good. And then possibly fast-tracking it?
Well, it would be the goal. You know, this is the perfect, unfortunately, this is the perfect disease for fast-tracking a drug that looks good. You know, we don't have anything
mm-hmm.
that treats, we have ZIP to treat progression of Huntington's disease. And if there is decent mm-hmm. evidence that a safe drug can do this, then fast tracking it, or the new term as of last year is breakthrough medicine
mm-hmm.
classification. So if so there are, all of those things are, you know, unknowns right now, but I think community may in the short and long term be helpful in trying to move things along in terms of development or a new clinical trial for use of this drug in Huntington's.
Mm-hmm. So if it comes to the U.S., we will have to go through a phase 2-3 trial, do you think?
Well, it would, yes. Since it's already
okay.
in safety would have been established in this one, so it would be a phase
mm-hmm.
3 trial.
Okay, because it's already
the FDA often requires two confirmatory trials, but if their results are good enough that it isn't ethical to do another trial, or that argument can be made, then it may be that this trial will be enough. I doubt it, but, you know, who knows?
Hmm. Well, it's if, in clinical
instance,
trial. It's
if, for
in
instance,
clinical trial
in
a, now. Here.
Okay, we're both talking at the same time. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. It's in clinical trial now here for other purposes.
It has been in clinical trial for cystinosis here, but that clinical trial is done. It's complete and is already FDA approved for children with or who now live into adulthood for cystinosis. So the drug is FDA approved already for another indication. It is not approved for Huntington's yet. So it already is approved. It's out there. You know, a doctor could write a prescription for it for a child with cystinosis. The drug is available for that condition. And FDA approved for the use in that condition, but it's not approved for the use in Huntington's. That's why we need to have FDA review of the present trial and recommendations whether or not the company will need to do another. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. We have to satisfy our FDA. That's number one, right? Before we can have drugs or treatment. So that's. But it sounds so promising. How does it actually affect the HD person?
Well, the up until you know, a couple of weeks ago when this new information came out, the new research information. So we not only have a clinical trial that has a very positive signal for Huntington's, at least, we can say that much. Then a few weeks later, out comes a paper that gives us very eloquent biology for why it probably would be helpful in Huntington. And it sounds simple in a way. And I'm going to use an analogy of hypothyroidism or low thyroid situation, which I have, and for which I take thyroid hormone or thyroid replacement therapy. So my thyroid, for whatever reason, doesn't make enough thyroid hormone. So I take it and replace it, and it accomplishes exactly the same thing as if my own gland were making enough. The Solomon lab showed, at least in their models, that an amino acid is lacking in Huntington's, in the areas of the body, the brain, the liver, where other, we know that Huntington's pathology is happening. So cysteine is very low in the striatum or in that part of the brainstem that is most affected by Huntington's. They show that in the mouse it goes down with time. And they show that also using human brain specimens, donated human brain specimens, and they show that this amino acid, cysteine, that's S-Y-S-T-E-I-N-E, there's so many cysteine, cysteamines, et cetera, it's easy to get confused, but they probably all relate to each other. They're not equal, but they relate to each other very closely. So cysteine is deficient and increasingly gets deficient over time, and it appears certainly in the animal and cell models, but probably in people too, as studied by postmortem studies. Now, cysteine is an amino acid. It is a simple, relatively simple molecule. So if you're deficient in this, if you replace it, you know, if you're able to take a medication that replaces it, does that help? You know, does that help? And in their mouse models, it says it did. It does. And there's been many mouse studies, different mouse models that show that it, yes, it does help. This kind of compound does help. And that it also increases cysteine levels in the brain. And this goes right along with improvement that is seen in people. So it makes very good sense that these two things are very much related.
Is this an oral medication then that they're using?
The medication, the Raptor's medication, is a tablet, I believe. But so it's oral. You take it. It's a tablet that is enteric coated in a way, so it goes through the stomach and isn't absorbed there, but it's absorbed in later past the stomach in the small intestine. And so you take it orally. It's a pill. No injections into brain, nothing like that. It's a pill.
Yep.
One of the points that will come up probably is, well, cysteine is, you can buy it in the store. You know, why don't we all go out and get this supplement and take it? Well, it turns out that the supplement there wouldn't be enough probably for it to get to brain. So don't anybody out there go waste your money on cysteine, the amino acid supplement. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay. I had to turn off my phone. How does it affect, what is the process? How does it improve movement or progression?
Why do they think that it improves things in Huntington's?
Right.
There are 100 different theories. It is a very important amino acid to have. It's a part of the building blocks of proteins. So the function would be different if there weren't cysteine around. They are a very important part of something called thiols. A sulfur-containing compounds that have a lot to do with energy production, with free radical damage. Then the list just goes on and on. BDNF is increased. It's unclear why. So there are the cysteine deficiency probably is affects many different cell systems. So it's not one thing that it's making better. It's probably a number of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the building blocks, of necessary proteins for cells to live. Why is it deficient in just certain parts of the brain? I don't think anyone knows that. So it's down in striatum most, but it's also down in cortex in later disease, but it spares other parts of the brain. So nobody knows why that is. So I can't really specifically answer your question, what is it doing?
Yeah.
It's doing a lot of things, and I have some references to that in my article, which unfortunately you probably wouldn't get more than the abstract, but it does review a bit of it. So there are cysteine also goes to other important, is a precursor or must be had before certain other amino acids are made available too. Amino acids like taurine, you don't have to remember these words, but they cysteine is a necessary component for a lot of the building blocks and proteins in cells.
Right.
That have to do with maintaining energy, good membranes, and free radical damage.
Wow.
And I'm
when
sure there are
discovered?
Many more things. Go ahead.
When was it discovered that this might be beneficial for Huntington's?
I mean, it's just this, recent research.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What they did... They did it on a mouse model, but it's interesting. In some ways, it's also serendipity. In this lab, they had an investigator that had made a mouse that was, and they had knocked out or deleted an enzyme that was necessary to make cysteine, amino acid. And they saw that this mouse behaved very much like Huntington's,
mm-hmm.
like the Huntington's mouse models. So they said, aha. There was an aha moment,
mm-hmm.
and they said maybe this has something to do with Huntington. So, you know, what they found, I'm saying cysteine deficiency, but what they found is that the enzyme responsible for, one of the enzymes responsible for manufacturing cysteine in the cell was the one that was knocked down in Huntington.
I'll be darned.
And by serendipity, they were working on something else, and they thought, boy, this mouse looks a lot like Huntington's mice. And they pursued that. So there was a little serendipity in there.
Yeah. What is the supplement derived from? Is it synthetic? How do they produce it?
Cysteine is, you can find it in the diet. There are mm-hmm. certain foods, and I should know this, but people can Google it, what foods. See,
mm-hmm.
The amino acid is one that you can get in the diet, but it's also one that cells manufacture because not enough is usually gotten in the diet. So cysteine is also
mm-hmm.
made by cells. Now, there's some amino acids biologic molecules where that's the case, that you can make it when you're deficient in it by diet. And that
mm-hmm.
and this amino acid is one of those.
Wow. So complicated, you know, chemistry.
Yes. I was a chemistry major as an undergraduate, and I've forgotten most of it, believe me.
Well, it looks like we might have a new clinical trial then from Raptor.
Well, you know, the best possible option is that, you know, at the end of this 3 years, they will show equivalent results in the people that they were on placebo that they now put on the drug.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they will see continued improvement in those who were on it for a whole 3 years.
Right. Will they be able to use that data at the FDA?
I'm sorry?
Are they going to be able to use that data from...
Well, I'm sure they will.
I'm
sure they will. It's still... See, they're only done with the first half of the trial. Raptor press release was information from only the placebo-controlled part of it, where half the people got the drug and half the people didn't. Right now, or after this first year and a half, they go to a trial that has everyone on the drug. And what you would expect is that if they're, you know, the premise is correct, that it is going to be useful in Huntington's, then those people who were on the drug to begin with will continue to show improvement. And the placebo group that didn't have the improvement would start showing some improvement too.
It's amazing.
Does that make sense? There's another year and a half to go before that is complete.
Now, were they able to remain on their medications, their current medications, while doing this?
trial? They were able to, you know, again, I don't know all the criteria, whether they were able to be on antipsychotics or not, but they were able to continue tetrabenazine.
Mm-hmm.
And if, you know, tetrabenazine and antipsychotics will worsen motor scores, particularly of voluntary, you know, while they may help chorea scores, they will worsen scores for voluntary movements, the tapping tests, eye movement tests, a number of, or the voluntary ones that is part of the motor scale of Huntington's. So those drugs
right.
actually worsen those scores. So that puts
wow.
a, it makes the data more difficult to interpret because they were on tetrabenazine.
Mm-hmm. Hey, it looks like we might have a caller. Let me check in with this person here. Hold on one second, Dr. Goodman. Hello, caller on 661. Welcome to Ask Dr. Goodman Show. Do you have a question for Dr. Goodman? Caller on 661. Hello. I guess they just want to listen. Okay, so go ahead. Keep talking. Sorry about that. I have two callers, but they're not wanting to ask
okay.
questions right now. They're shy.
Sure.
That's okay. Yeah.
It's a complicated discussion, and maybe my articles were a little too complicated as well. And that's why I tried to use the thyroid replacement analogy.
Mm-hmm.
If a lot of Huntington's can be taken back to just being deficient in something,
mm-hmm.
of course it's going to be more complicated than that. But if that is one of the major things that goes wrong in Huntington's, that this component, this molecule, is deficient, this vital molecule for life is deficient, then replacing that molecule will help a lot.
Right.
And that's kind of like a thyroid illness, a low thyroid illness. If you just let that go, it gets worse over time. And it does a lot of different things to the body. Heart, lungs, muscles, brain. Severe hypothyroidism is not a pretty disease. And we don't see that anymore because we have thyroid replacement. And I think the medical analogy is if a lot of what Huntington's is causing is a deficiency in this vital molecule, then replacing it will help a lot.
Right.
And that's what I think these, you know, all of these experiments in animal models that go back 10 years, you know, show that, and it's that they give different kinds of molecules that end up being cysteine, but they all are doing the same thing. And they're giving the same kind of results in three or four different kinds of mouse models. One of the, I think, fascinating things about Sal Snyder's work is that when you take a cell that that has the Huntington's gene put in it, and you grow these in a dish, if you and those cells will over time die, and whereas cells that don't have the Huntington's gene will keep on living. If you put a cysteine-containing mixture in, you know, the bath of the cells that have the Huntington gene in it, the bad Huntington gene in it, then those cells look just like normal cells or behave. Mm. Let me say that. That's probably not correct. They live as long as the other cells. They don't have any shortened lifespan. But, you know, that's a simple system, and you don't have to get it in through the gut and then off to the brain and then into the cell. You have it just sitting there. And, of course, that's a very simple system that just gives you some information, but it's not the same thing as then a person, you know, taking a cysteine supplement. because cysteine by itself will be cleared from the blood very quickly, and not very much will get to the brain. So you have to do it differently, and this particular drug, and there are different ways of doing it, but Raptor has a drug that that can get absorbed and then also make it to the brain and make differences in models for sure, and hopefully in people.
I just Googled cysteine foods, and Live Well popped up. It's called Live Well, Jillian Michaels. You know, she's the fitness guru. And she says cysteine can help protect your body from damage from free radicals and can help detoxify it. So she's giving us food options. I can put that. Animal sources of cysteine, grain and vegetable sources of cysteine.
Yep.
It's kind of interesting.
Likely to be high in meats, I would imagine. But again,
like
that's something
chicken.
That can be found on the web. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you are probably not going to be able to get enough into the brain
just
with oral intake of food and probably of cysteine, of that amino acid that's available as a supplement. In all of the experiments used in mice, they use other molecules that in turn go to cysteine. And those things are not available by supplement.
Right. Well, and if you have a gene that's deficient of the amino acid production, whatever produces the amino acid, obviously you're going to need something a little more beefy to help it, right?
You need to get it into
the
brain. Yeah.
Right.
And getting it into, you know, through the gut, through the bloodstream without being degraded, and then passing the blood-brain barrier. There are things that you can certainly do in animals that you can't do in people, but actually it looks like we can do it in people with the cysteamine of this Raptor drug. We should be able to do it if the dosage is, you know, correct.
And it's tolerable, too, you know.
Well, it's not easy. It's not taking a Tylenol. You know, children with cystinosis taking this new drug, it's a lot easier than the old one. But there's still some side effects. But Raptor reported that there were no more side effects in their Huntington's trial than in using the drug and placebo.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the dosage used in the Huntington's trial is a little less than that is prescribed for cystinosis.
Yeah. I wonder if it's something that could be infused, you know, in the blood, if that would be helpful.
Well, when they do various metabolic studies, you know, that's what they do. They infuse it intravenously or even intra-arterially. So it will bypass, you know, the liver and the portal system for digestion. But, you know, in the long, we don't need to do that here because cysteamine, the drug that they are using in this trial, is one that does get into brain being fed, going through portal, going through absorption. So there's probably no need to consider that.
Is there any evidence that it could reverse damage?
There is no evidence of that.
Progression.
Well, let's say you had something that slowed down progression 60%, and you started this very early in life. you wouldn't, mm-hmm. something else would get you instead of Huntington's. You would die of something else.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking, I mean, if it pans out, the this early preliminary data pans out, is it going to reverse things for people with severe or disease? Probably not. I think the clinical trial is being done on people with early and early middle disease, so ambulatory, self-sufficient people. But they also are people who have chorea, so they're symptomatic. They're not pre-manifest. But they late-stage disease individuals were not in the clinical trial. Almost any drug is going to be less successful after a significant amount of damage has been done, and I think that's true for almost any disease.
Could be used as a preventative for symptom.
Well, if it really is neuroprotective and it's a safe drug, and we know that already from its having been in cystinosis kids, it would be something that would be, if it is neuroprotective, it will be used before symptoms develop.
Now, is cystinosis, the cystinosis children that you're speaking of, are their symptoms similar to Huntington's symptoms?
No. They have a different enzyme deficiency that causes a cysteine compound to build up in kidneys, in a certain cell of the kidneys. And their cysteamine drug forms a complex with what's causing the toxin and lets it be excreted. They're able to pass it out then into urine. But it's a different defect than Huntington's. It's a different enzyme.
Sounds like it's a very important amino acid, though, for the body.
Yes.
Wow.
It's a sulfur-containing one. And there aren't many sulfur-containing amino acids, and they're very important in protein interactions and in membranes and in mitochondria. Other amino acids are important, too, but, hey, this is the one that may be more the culprit than others.
How interesting. At least for healthy cell development, too, right?
Yes. The mouse that had the enzyme knocked out of it that makes cysteine, you know, if you put these mice into a cysteine restricted diet, they do very badly. So if you're not giving them any extra cysteine, they're not making any of their own. They do very badly. So it's a necessary, and they do very badly in a very similar way to Huntington in mouse models. Of course, this is all study in mice.
Very good. Well, we'll definitely be watching for more information coming from Raptor and hopefully a clinical trial coming soon.
This is a small company that, as many biotechs are, they are not, don't have a lot of financial resources. This company has also done this without the aid of the Huntington Study Group. You know, they've done this in Europe, in France. So there was no Huntington Study Group involvement. There has been no CHDI involvement. So our organizations, our North American organizations, U.S. organizations, don't have any direct connection with this company. Or financial support or scientific support from. It may be that the community, it may be very important for the community to step up Mm-hmm. And think of ways of, you know, supporting this company through an FDA process for supporting this company in getting another, if another clinical trial will be needed, helping them get it off the ground in some way. You know,
right.
Advocating for involvement of our organizations to move this, what looks like a very positive signal, to move this drug along.
Well, we're definitely here to help, whatever needs to be done. And we've got the outlet, so.
Right.
Try to get the word out.
I think that getting the word out that we need to, we can't wait for CHDI to do it or for HSG to do it, you know, without our saying, hey, we would like you guys to get involved. Help this company
mm-hmm.
out. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Because they don't
well,
have that support going into it.
Mm-hmm. I think the first thing to do would be to contact them and ask them, how can we help, you know?
Right,
I think
exactly.
That on their press release, they have contact names and phone numbers. I'd sure like to give them a call.
You know, we can give
our
HSG friends a little nudge in saying the community is interested in pursuing it. Is there a champion out there? And it turns out, you know, this drug was the old one. Was mm-hmm. a safety trial was done in Huntington's in Kansas. Dr. Dubinsky there, an HSG, very good HSG clinician researcher, and he had, you know, championed a similar drug, but the old one, the Cystagon one.
Uh-huh.
And maybe he can be a champion for this.
Mm-hmm.
We can email him. You know, I mean,
it's
not clear how we can help, but we need to be thinking of ways to help, because here we have a drug that if it pans out to be good, you know, we don't know the results of, you know, in a year and a half. We don't know that it's going to be good, and so we need to be cautious about that.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's given us a positive signal, so moving it along when it's already FDA approved for another indication and there's already safety, then this is a drug that could be, if it's, you know, if it's actually beneficial, could be very close to the clinic.
I know.
Or if no one champions it, it may never get there.
Why do you think there doesn't seem to be a support for it?
It's already a proprietary drug. In other words, it's already out there by this company for another disease. So someone coming in, you know, might not be, you would make more money on something if you developed your own drug.
Yep, I hear
you.
Okay.
I think there is a component of that.
Kind of the economics of it, right?
I think there's some economics here, yep.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. Well.
And, you know, it's ownership, you know, who, it's intellectual property ownership. It is, you know, somebody else developed it. Why should I promote what they're doing? I don't know what it is.
Gosh.
What the thoughts are, or whether it's, you know, they're just not aware. They're not making the connections
mm-hmm.
because they're so busy doing some of their own thing. You know, there are a lot of other things going on, and I don't want to be blaming anyone for not being excited about this or moving it forward, because they're all good people working towards Huntington's, and you have to pick and choose.
Right.
You can't do everything. But this is one I think they should do.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely be looking forward to hearing more about it and maybe contacting them from a advocacy point of view to see if there's something that can be done, you know. It sounds very promising, sounds very therapeutic. And we definitely need that, right?
We do.
Yep. Well, gosh, thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. And if there's any other articles that you can send our way relating to the study and that kind of thing, we have two wonderful articles from Dr. Goodman. One was posted on March 1st, Raptor's Clinical Trial for Cystamine in Huntington's, Cause for Optimism. And then the other, of course, is was posted by Dr. Goodman on March 27, What is Cystine and What Does It Have to Do with Huntington's Disease? Sounds like kind of a key, important role that it plays in like you said, neuroprotection. So check out her website, www.hddrugworks.org. Check out the articles. And the Raptor press release was posted on February 20. And you can get that on our website as well. There are some names and phone numbers and emails. So if you're interested in supporting this, I suggest we contact them. In fact, I will be doing that. I don't know if you've done that, Dr. Goodman. I would imagine you probably
have. Yes.
Yeah. So we'll see if we can get the interest going. Sometimes it's hard to, get people interested in promoting something.
Also, there is limitations placed on companies who are, of course, they're promoting their drug.
That's what they do.
That's what they do. And there are limitations, actually, that regulatory agencies place on these companies. They can't say, advocate for my drug.
Right.
Because there are regulatory things. So it is not so much us asking them, how do you want us to help you? We instead need to come up with, think of ways how to help them. What do we do? Do we advocate with our HSG people? Do we advocate with FDA? What are the things that might be done? But they're not going to be able to orchestrate this or tell us what to do because there are regulatory things. So they may not respond. They can't come on your show, for instance. And talk about this because there are various regulations. Now, if they were just doing a trial, then they would be able to, as other investigators have come on your show. But when it reaches a regulatory level or potentially one, then they are limited in how they can contact the community.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be done through volunteer organizations, volunteers like you and me. And like the rest of us.
Information. Thank you so much. Well, what's the best way, do you think, for us to advocate then?
Well, we need to think, first of all. I suspect that HDSA is also thinking through this and from different aspects, and I don't think there is an answer yet. All of our community organizations should be, reviewing this, coming to our own impressions, and then thinking of ways, and then joining together. So I think that's, we don't have a plan yet. But there will be a plan, I believe. So keep your ears open, and if I learn more about such a plan, I'll talk with you about it in the coming months.
Okay, sounds good. We're here to help, so let us know.
Alrighty. Okay.
Okay. Well, listen, let's go ahead and wrap up the show. We didn't have any questions, unfortunately, but I'm sure there will be questions coming in later.
We explained it so well.
I know. You did.
No.
But
it's not an easy topic, and articles were a little complex probably, too.
Well, basic science is something that we all kind of need to learn as we're dealing with this disease, and generation after generation, the more we learn about that, the better. And so this kind of a show is perfect for that because it puts that question out there and it puts that information out there.
Some advice is not to worry about which cysteine molecules that we're talking about. Just say, just think of it as cysteine, even though it's not the same molecule, it goes to that molecule. Or it's the same class of molecules that amino acid works with. We make it too complex, I think. Now, we don't really care what one is and what the other one is and that they're related. We know that they go to, there is some balance between them, and they either split each other off or they combine and they do their thing.
And we're looking for neuroprotection. That's what we're looking for HD loved ones.
Yeah.
So good stuff. Thank you so much. Well, this concludes our show for tonight, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Dr. Goodman, thank you again, as always, for coming on and spending this time with us. And come back and listen to the on-demand episodes. Feel free to direct people to the recorded episodes. Get the free app, Help for HD, the original mobile connection to education resources and information about JHD and HD. Find us on Facebook or follow us on our website, helpforhd-international.org. Don't forget to check out Dr. Goodman's articles, fantastic articles and practical information for Huntington's on her website, and that's hddrugworks.org. And again, everyone, thank you for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week. Have a good one. Bye-bye. Thanks, Dr. Goodman.